Well, friends, this is certainly a strange and unusual Easter, is it not? This is the first Easter that I can think of, at least in recent memory, where I don't find myself gathered physically with other people in a church building for some sort of worship service. This coronavirus pandemic that we find ourselves in the midst of certainly has caused all sorts of chaos and disruptions in our lives. But I think for many of us, if we were honest, not being able to be gathered in a church building for an Easter Sunday service might actually fall pretty low on the totem pole of disruptions in our lives. See, as it relates to this coronavirus pandemic that we find ourselves in, it feels like there's this thing in the air. I remember vividly feeling this thing in the air for the first time as I was sitting on a couch in our living room holding our son Pax, who was just a few weeks old at this point. I was holding him in one arm, and he was fast asleep. And I had my cell phone in the other hand, and I'm scrolling through the news, and this is like when all of these state sanctions were just starting to come out of Columbus. This is when schools were getting shut down. This is when dining rooms and restaurants were getting shut down. This is right around the same time that Stark County had its first case, back when it seemed like one case was a really, really, really big deal. And I remember scrolling through the news and switching between news and social media and seeing people's reactions to all of this. And I remember looking at all of this and trying to take it all in and comprehend it all. And I remember looking between that and our son and just recognizing how incredibly vulnerable he was, and just feeling so incredibly overwhelmed at the reality of this pandemic and our son, and not sure how to deal with all of this mixing together. Some of us have felt this thing in the air as it pertains to our jobs. Some of us have either been laid off or furloughed, and we're not sure where our next paycheck comes from, and we're not sure if we'll be able to support ourselves or our families during this time. Some of us feel this thing in the air as it pertains to the businesses that we own and run, because it certainly feels like the business that we own or run today feels very different than the business that we owned or ran a month and a half ago. And it seems like we're continually trying to reinvent ourselves, and we're wondering if we as a business will even be relevant when all of this comes to an end. Some of us may be feeling this thing in the air because as they describe the vulnerable populations that this coronavirus affects, we recognize that we find ourselves in that vulnerable population. And this thing in the air is causing all sorts of anxiety about the unknown of what may be with our health. I think it's important to recognize that this thing in the air actually has a name. And its name is grief. In an interview with Harvard Business Review, an expert on grief and all things related to grief by the name of David Kessler writes, "We are grieving on a micro and macro level," which is to say that as we think about the grief that's being caused by this coronavirus and the chaos and disruptions that it's brought into our life, we are all grieving, and we're grieving in different levels. It means that we as individual households are grieving. It means that we at a neighborhood level are grieving. It means that we as a city, and thinking about the ways that we go about life as a city, are grieving. That we as a state are grieving. That we as a nation, we as the entire world are grieving. And it seems like grief is a really appropriate term for what's happening, because grief comes anytime that there's a change or a loss. And there's certainly all kinds of changes and certainly all kinds of losses being experienced at this point in time. Kessler would go on in that interview to say that there's actually different kinds of grief that we're experiencing right now. There's the grief of normalcy, that our lives just look so incredibly different now than they did before this pandemic hit so close to home. He says that there's the grief of our livelihood, of not knowing how we're going to continue to provide for ourselves and our family. There's the grief of health, and there's the grief, obviously, of lives that have been radically affected and even lost as a result of this thing. And he goes on and he says that there's another really important type of grief to acknowledge in the midst of all of this. And it's what he calls anticipatory grief, which is a grief that comes from an unknown future. He says that any time that there's any sort of like confusion about where things are headed or what's happening in the future, that that in and of itself can cause an anticipatory grief. And so we find ourselves with this thing in the air. We find this grief in the air that all of us are experiencing at a micro and at a macro level. And we're trying to figure out how to go about our lives in the midst of it all. Which brings us to this Sunday. Because this Sunday is a really important Sunday in the Christian calendar. Because this Sunday is Easter Sunday. This is the Sunday where we celebrate the resurrection, the empty tomb, that there is new life, that new creation is bursting forth into the old creation. And yet we find ourselves in this Easter celebration in the midst of this pandemic where there's grief all around us. We find ourselves in this paradox of this joyous celebration of resurrection and new life. And yet we find ourselves with this dark shadow all around us, reminding us of all of the bad news that's taking place around us. Over the past week, I've been reflecting on what seems to be this paradox of Easter and resurrection and new life, and yet grief and pandemic and a virus that's wreaking havoc all over the world. And I began to center on this one particular thought that kept emerging as I sat with this. And it was this idea that if Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us, then that means that God is with us through it all. Now, I think this is really important for us to acknowledge because Emmanuel is a word within Christian circles that tends to stay around Christmas time, right? We talk about Emmanuel, God with us, coming in the form of the little baby Jesus, right? And Emmanuel is this word that's often associated with such a joyous and celebratory occasion. It's draped in Christmas lights and Christmas trees and red ribbons, right? And it's easy for us to think about God being with us in the midst of really, really good times. But if Jesus is God with us in the good times, then I think that means that Jesus has to be God with us even in the not so good times. If Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us, then it means that Jesus is God with us through it all, in the good times and the bad times, in the ugly times and in the beautiful times. I think if Jesus has anything at all to say to us in good times, then that means that Jesus absolutely has to have something to say to us in the not so good times. So here's what I want to do this morning. I want us to keep this idea before us, this idea that if Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us, then that means that God is with us through it all. I want us to keep this idea before us, and I want us to spend some time looking through Mark chapter 16, which is where Mark tells his description of the events surrounding Jesus' resurrection. And I want to think about this idea. I want to think about Easter. I want to think about resurrection. I want to think about grief, and I want to think about pandemic. And I want to hold all these things together because I think as we look at Mark chapter 16, we'll see that there's some really beautiful and significant things that we can glean from it. So the first part that I want us to look at is Mark chapter 16, verse 1. So this is like the classic Easter story here, right? This is when Jesus' followers go and find that his tomb is empty, that he's no longer dead, but that he's been raised to new life. So Mark tells the story this way. He says, "When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another, 'Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?' When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, 'Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement has seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. So again, this is like the classic Easter text, right? We see that these women followers of Jesus are the first witnesses to the resurrection. They gather their spices because they want to go and do the ritual anointing of Jesus' body, and they go down to his tomb, and they're worried about who's going to roll away the tomb for them so that they can get in, and they get there, and they realize that's not even something for them to worry about because the stone's already been rolled away. And they go in, and they don't find what they expect to find, right? They go in expecting to find Jesus' body, and they don't find that. In fact, the only thing that they find is this angelic being, which would have been pretty jarring for them, right? And this angelic being says to them, "Jesus isn't here. He has been raised from the dead." And then this angelic being says, "Hey, now go and tell the rest of Jesus' disciples, go and tell the rest of the followers that this is what happened." And Mark tells us this really peculiar detail, where he says that the women didn't do that. Instead, the first witnesses to the resurrection were totally freaked out, and they ran and they hid, and they didn't tell a single person about it. Now, you'll notice on the screen here, or whatever version of a Bible that you're holding, that there's probably a footnote at the end of verse 8. And if you go and you find that verse note at the bottom of the page, you'll find something along the lines of, "Some of the most ancient authorities bring the book to a close at the end of verse 8. Now, without going into too much of like textual criticism, which is like such a fascinating aspect of biblical studies, basically, when we think about the Bible that we have today, essentially what it is a copy of 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 a copy. So shortly after the life of Jesus, his followers began to write things down. And as they began to write things down, copies of that were made and distributed, and copies of that were made and distributed, and copies of that were made and distributed, and copies of that were made and distributed. And so when we get our Bible in its final form that we have today, there's some really smart people who know an awful lot about languages like Greek and Hebrew and Aramaic. They sit down with all of these copies, and they begin to piece them together and figure out what's the final text of what we should have here. So what this footnote is saying is that in the oldest of the copies of the copies of copies of copies of copies of copies of copies that we have, this is where the Gospel of Mark ends. Which is one way of saying that in the oldest version of Mark's Gospel, he ends it right here with the women followers of Jesus, the first witnesses of the resurrection, hearing the good news of Jesus is being raised from the dead, and they run and hide and don't tell a single word. I think there's something very beautiful about this. But before we get to that, let's think about what's been going on in the women's life. Over the last few days, they have experienced all kinds of suffering. This Jesus that they've been following, this friend, this leader, this teacher in their life, was betrayed by one of their close friends. And after he was betrayed, he was arrested. And after he was arrested, he went through this mock trial. And after this mock trial, he was beaten. He was humiliated. They saw him carry his cross. They saw him hung on this cross. And they saw him hang there and die. And they saw him be buried. Meaning, like, over the last several days, they have experienced nothing but suffering. And so in the midst of all of this immense suffering, they come to the tomb, and they hear this radical good news. And they don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to receive it. They don't know how to hear this good news. And I think that there's something pretty universal about their experience. And I think there's something universal about their experience that translates to this experience that we find ourselves in today in the midst of pandemic. And it's this idea that in the midst of immense suffering, we often don't know how to receive immense good news. For these first witnesses of the resurrection, They had experienced nothing but bad news for the last few days. And then they come and they hear this radical, immense good news that Jesus has been raised, that there is resurrection, that new life, new creation is bursting forth into the old. And they don't know how to hear that. They don't know how to receive that. And so they run and they hide. And I think there's something really beautiful that speaks to us in this particular moment that we find ourselves in. Because I don't know about you, but it feels like there's an awful lot of bad news going on around us. Each and every day we see press conferences from our governor and from the president. And it seems like every day there's new guidelines being rolled out from the CDC about how to respond to the coronavirus. And in the midst of all of this, it feels like there's an awful lot of bad news, and it feels like there's an awful lot of suffering going around. And we come to this day of Easter, of resurrection, and it feels like we should be saying, good news, good news, good news. It feels like we should be celebrating, and yet it feels like there is just this cloud hanging over it all, reminding us of the reality just around the corner from us. So I don't know how you're feeling this morning, but if good news is hard for you to hear this morning, I think that's okay. And I think if good news is hard for you to hear, I think you find yourself in pretty good company with the first witnesses to the resurrection, because I think it was hard for them to hear too. If good news is hard for you to hear this morning, I think that's okay. But I think there's something that we need to do in light of that. If good news is hard for us to hear, I think we need to name it. Because when we name that it's hard for us to hear good news, when we name the grief that we're feeling, then we begin to have power over that grief. See, grief, like all other difficult, painful, suffering-filled emotions, gains its power from hiding in the shadows. But as soon as we take grief and we bring it out of the shadow and bring it into the life, bring it into the light, we begin to slip away from its power over us. And we can begin to work through it. We can begin to acknowledge it. We can begin to name it. And we can begin to move forward in light of this grief. As soon as we name grief, grief, it loses all sorts of power over us. And so if you find yourself in the midst of all of this immense suffering and you don't know how to receive good news this morning, first of all, I think that's okay. But I would encourage you to name it. Call up a friend, FaceTime a friend, and say, hey, I know I should be happy in the midst of Easter, but I'm having a really hard time. And allow that friend to process that with you. Now, if you are looking at a paper version of a Bible, you'll notice that the version that we have doesn't end in verse 8, but it actually goes on and it says a lot more about what happened after Jesus' resurrection. And I think that's actually a really fascinating and compelling note on the Gospel of Mark. So, for example, the story goes on and we see something like this from verse 14. It says, later, Jesus appeared to the 11 themselves as they were sitting at the table, and he upbraided them for their lack of faith and stubbornness because they had not believed those who saw him after he had risen. And he said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the good news to the whole creation. After this, Jesus goes on and lists off all of these radical and crazy and amazing things that the disciples will be able to do as the power and the Spirit of God comes upon them. And I can't help but read this and think about verse 8 and how that ends with the women being afraid and hiding. And what seems to be happening here where Jesus empowers and commissions the disciples. I can't help but think about these two radically different ways of responding to the good news of resurrection. That one were afraid and hid, and others were empowered and commissioned to go out and do all sorts of amazing things. So what seems to be happening here? Well, it appears that this longer ending of Mark, as it's addressed, was actually added later on. So we have the copies of copies of copies of copies of copies. So we have the original one, and there's a copy of that, and a copy of that, and a copy of that. So the original probably ended at verse 8. And then as copies began to circulate, and as people began to think about Jesus in this new light, and as they began to think about resurrection and new life, they began to think, that's no way to end a gospel. Like, if we're wanting to tell people this good news, leaving it with people running and hiding and not telling a single soul probably isn't the best ending of it. Now, I recognize that this can feel really scandalous to us, that this was an addition, that this was potentially an addition to Mark's gospel. But I think there's actually something really beautiful here. And I think the beauty of this is that both can actually be true. I think both of these responses and endings to Mark can actually be true, because I think we can have the women being afraid and running and hiding and not telling a single soul. And I think we can have Jesus telling the disciples that they are now empowered and commissioned. See, for the first witnesses to the resurrection, this was a new thing that was coming into their life. This was a new normal, if you will. And they didn't know how to respond to it. And so they responded in the way that they did. They ran and were afraid and hid. But as that new normal became their new normal, as they began to realize these things about Jesus, as they began to see the resurrected Jesus, as they began to walk in the power of the Spirit, they began to develop this new normal. And as they developed this new normal, they began to tell a new story. See, I think this applies to all of us as well. That when we find a new normal, we find a new story. For those first witnesses, they didn't know how to respond to this good news of Jesus. But as time began to grow and as they began to walk in this new normal, they began to tell a different story. They didn't end the story with fear and hiding, but rather they began to end the story with empowerment and being commissioned and being sent out into the world to proclaim this good news. And I think this is particularly true for us as we find ourselves in the midst of this season of grief and pandemic. See, we find ourselves early in the midst of all of this. And we find ourselves telling stories about holding a baby and being really anxious and being really overwhelmed with the news. Because this is our new normal. We don't know how to walk in this yet. But I'm convinced that as this new normal becomes actually a new normal for us, and as we begin to develop new rhythms and new patterns and new ways of being in the midst of all of this chaos and disruption, the story that we tell won't be about the anxiety that we felt at the beginning of this. But rather, the story that we tell will be about the radical creativity that was birthed in the middle of this. We'll be telling stories about how a not-so-tech-savvy church like First Mennonite was able to somehow hold an online worship service on Easter and somehow be together in the midst of social distancing. We'll tell stories of immense generosity and immense courage in the face of such great adversity. As we begin to slip in a new normal and find these new rhythms and new patterns and new ways of being, I think we're going to look back and we're going to tell a new story. And it's not going to be about how we were afraid and hid, but instead it's going to be about our creativity, our courage, our love and support and generosity for one another. But I think that the story tells us something pretty beautiful. And that's if you're not feeling empowered and commissioned quite yet. If this all still feels really new and unknown to you, I think the good news is, first of all, that's okay. But the second good news is that over time, we'll begin to develop new eyes as we slip into this new normal, and we'll begin to see and tell a new story. Friends, these are certainly strange and unusual times. But again, in the midst of these strange and unusual times, I'm all the more committed to this idea that if Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us, then that means that God is with us through it all, the good and the bad, the ugly and the beautiful. That if Jesus can be God with us in the midst of resurrection, then I think that that means that Jesus is still God with us in the midst of resurrection, even though there may be a pandemic happening around us. Friends, Jesus is not absent from this moment. Resurrection is not absent from this moment. New life is not absent from this moment. But it may take us a little bit of time for our eyes to adjust to begin to see it that way. So my prayer for us this morning is this: that wherever you find yourself today, that you would recognize Christ with you there. That wherever you find yourself today, that you would recognize resurrection with you there. And that wherever you find yourself today, that you would recognize new life with you there. And as we begin to recognize all of these things, that we would come to know the love of God that not even death can defeat. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia. Amen.